This is WGBH's Morning Edition. I'm Bob C. Defense lawyers for Marathon bomber Zahar Saniyev could rest their case in the penalty phase of his trial today. However, they're not saying whether Saniyev will take the stand in his own defense. During proceedings yesterday, testimony focused on the brain development of adolescents, with the defense suggesting that Saniyev's mind was not fully formed at the time of the Boston Marathon bombings. But other evidence presented by the defense may have undercut that argument. WGBH Radio's Adam Riley has more.
At its core, the Saniyev trial is about free will. Was Zahar Saniyev fully responsible when he bombed the Boston Marathon in 2013? Or did he get a significant push from factors outside his control? His radicalized older brother, his crumbling nuclear family, even Chechen culture. On Wednesday, the defense added neuroscience to the mix, calling Dr. Jay Geed, an expert on the adolescent brain. He testified that at 19, Tsarnaev's age at the time of the bombings, the brain is only partly developed, with full development not occurring until 25 or even 30. But here's the catch. Throughout the penalty phase of this trial, the defense has cast Saniyev, before the bombings, as unusually kind, thoughtful, and mature. So when Geed admitted during cross-examination that behavior is the best way to gauge brain development, it raised a crucial question. Was the Zahar Saniyev who attacked the marathon a sweet but malleable kid who made a terrible choice, or a poised young man who knew exactly what he was doing when he did harm? Adam Riley, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
Well, joining me now to further expand on this subject is Dr. Marisa Silveri, the director of the Neurodevelopmental Laboratory on Addictions and Mental Health at McLean Hospital in Belmont and associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Welcome, Dr. Silveri.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, we just heard on Adam's report that Dr. Jay Geed, who is an expert on adolescent brains, say at 19, the brain is only partially developed. Now, can you expand on that theory, and do you agree with that assessment?
Certainly. Well, some of the work that we've been doing, Dr. Geed, my lab, many others, both in the U.S. and beyond, have really been trying to employ some technologies that are, you know, more in step with what we have today in terms of the evolution of the digital age, to find that, you know, we once conventionally thought that age 18 was adulthood, but neuroimaging is really, you know, changing the landscape of our view on that. And so the work that we do in our lab is really to try to understand the neurobiology of, you know, the what were you thinking, what is really at the core of decision-making in adolescence. And one of the things that we've been learning, particularly over the last decade, is that there are a number of organizational events in the brain that are really doing their biggest work during that second decade of life. So roughly from age 10 up until the early 20s, you know, a time that really overlaps with the need for improved decision-making. And this is really occurring on a number of fronts, both in terms of the structure of the brain, so how much gray matter, how many neurons there are, how well is the brain connected, what is the connectivity through white matter or axons that connect the neurons, the things that all that kind of come together to, so to speak, give the brain better self-service.
I guess the basic question here, though, is at age 19, wouldn't someone like Zahar Saniyev understand the difference between right and wrong?
Well, you know, that's what the research is showing, that, you know, given that age-old phrase, the what were you thinking, if you ask an adolescent, even those as old as 19, you know, even adults have what were you thinking moments, typically the right answer is known. So if you ask that question, what were you thinking, what was the right answer, they know what it was. But then you ask, well, then why did you do it? And typically, you know, the less than acceptable phrase comes back, I don't know. And really what that is the decision-making machinery trying to come together to make those differences. So it can happen in adulthood, but we also know that even particularly from 18 to 24, a period of life known as emerging adulthood, those changes are still fine-tuning. So right from wrong may have been known, but the difference is how well did the decision-making machinery come online at the time that it was necessary.
Now, it's also been known that Zahar Saniyev smoked quite a bit of marijuana. So what role does substance abuse play in young brain development and that kind of decision-making?
Well, we do know that the initiation of something like alcohol use is a very strong predictor of who's going to go on to have substance abuse issues later in life. And of course, with the changing legalization and regulations around marijuana, we know that that's going to only further compact the situation. You know, particularly for the developing brain, which as the frontal lobe is maturing and becoming sculpted, which is where executive functions sit and allow to have integration with the rest of the brain, we know that this part is particularly sensitive or vulnerable to substances, just basic initiation of substance use, and then with continued use in particular, that frontal lobe that requires all these neuronal resources, oxygen, glucose, everything to have good decision-making capacity is differentially impaired during adolescence as compared to adulthood. So that developing brain takes a bigger hit, so to speak, from initiation or exposure to substances than does an adult brain, only making the issue even more difficult to make a decision.
Well, legally, of course, ignorance of the law is not a defense. So when someone does something wrong or illegal, how accountable can they be held no matter what age they are?
That's a wonderful question. You know, this is something that as we start to lean on the science to educate us about the brain, when I talk to communities and parents, students, teachers, and I try to walk them through the biology of the brain and what is changing, I often joke with the audiences that next time your teenager has a what were you thinking moment, they're not allowed to say immature frontal lobe. And, you know, this gets a little bit of a laugh, but at the same time, the whole idea here is that if you know to say that phrase, then you should know better. So I think that we are in a prime position to use the neuroscience to arm us in a way that will help us to understand that it's not an excuse, but there is a lot of work that can be done in terms of outreach and education to let them know, listen, this is a critical time period, and decision-making is not going to be at its best. So if anything, let's let adults, parents, teachers, anyone who has an adult role or a guidance role in teenagers' lives, let them know that they need to be those, you know, those frontal lobe put on the brakes interactions or, you know, abilities to be good role models, and let them know decision making isn't easy, so you need to put in a little extra effort.
Well, thank you so much for your insight this morning.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Marisa Silveri is the director of the Neurodevelopmental Laboratory on Addictions and Mental Health at McLean Hospital and associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. For more information on this subject and Dr. Silveri's research, go to our website, wgbhnews.org.